What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm Vlad Sedler at RotoGut. I'm joined by Jason Anthony at Boom62, and this podcast is presented to you by Underdog Fantasy. Week 20 of the Major League Baseball season. We are getting to the finish line. Jay, what's going on, my man? How is life?
What up, Vlad? That intro song just gets me pumped every time. I love it, man. You couldn't have picked a better song. Life is good. When you say week 20, it really hits home because we are grinding right now, trying to see the finish line. If there's only 8 weeks left, but we forget that's still about 20% of the season, if not 25% of the season. So it's still a long time left, or a lot of time left, but it's getting close. Fab's getting low. Impact guys are getting fewer and fewer. So, how do we maximize the last 8 weeks is going to be crucial.
And I was just thinking about all the guys that have been really popping off lately, like these late round or even Fab guys. Like I'm thinking about how I was kind of fooled by Luis Matos going to be the truth and ends up being Helio Ramos. If he picked up Lawrence Butler or held on to Brenton Doyle, Brent Rooker, even, like how much that extra little boost is helping lineups. And on the flip side, a lot of these starting pitchers who have been so resourceful and such a value early on in the season, as you know, a couple of my highest rostered pitchers like Ronaldo Lopez, Garrett Crochet, those guys are inevitably slowing down. Obviously, they provided phenomenal production, but you got to keep grinding, got to figure out a way to keep getting those stats.
Yeah, it's definitely the heat of summer. The ball's flying out of ballparks. Good example, Mackenzie Gore. I know I had a lot of him. Was great the first half, and man, he is literally unstartable right now. Just been brutal. I know he snuck away with the win today, but the ball's flying out left and right. He's looking like he's going to hurt his neck watching the ball go over the fence. But yeah, these guys, they come out of nowhere. As much work as we do, as much research as we do, we spend $100 on this guy, he's a bust. You spend $3 on this guy, he hits. So there is some luck involved with it, but the more work we put in, the luckier we get, right?
Exactly. And staying flexible, being able to just make these moves quickly, not buying in the things we were talking about all season long, not buying into these biases or sunk cost fallacies and all these different things is so vital. A little bit later in the show, we are going to discuss chasing categories in this specific part of the season that I think is very important. In the meanwhile, or up until then, we're going to just discuss some of the news and happenings, injuries of such that have been happening over the last few weeks. And I guess let's start with these guys that are coming off rehab assignments. So there's a big set of players who are impact guys that should be impact guys. I was scolded several times on Twitter today. We're recording on Tuesday, August the 6th, about including Nolan Jones in that group because the only impact he's made was the month of October of the 2023 season. He's essentially been hurt all year, been an absolute bust, but maybe a healthy Nolan Jones will help. But let's start with, who you want to start with? A bunch of studs that we're expecting back here very soon.
Well, we can start with probably the strangest guy in Major League Baseball is Tristan Casas. His quote about his ribs, I don't even know where to start. It feels like he's getting stabbed now in his ribs when he swings rather than shot. Is that a good thing? He makes it sound like a good thing, but he's on rehab. He's supposedly coming back, but I think he could have one of the bigger impacts when and if he comes back on that really, really good Red Sox lineup. I know you were high on that lineup from the beginning of the year. You had good vibes on it. He could be a guy that can really carry your offense the next 7-8 weeks if he can get hot, but it's hard to come not playing for 2-3 months and come back swinging, as we're seeing with a lot of these guys that are getting called up or coming off injury.
And fantasy managers are just getting smarter every year. Like, everybody's in the same boat thinking, hey, why not just let Casas just kind of slide through the rest of the season, not really do anything, and then be a great value in ADP next season. But as we're learning, that's not how it always works. When you start to get into some of these sharp drafts, you're not really going to get a discount on those types of guys. I mean, even like, you know, Corbin Carroll, if he continues to hit well the next couple months, I mean, they'll probably be a second rounder. There's not going to be a lot of value there. As for Cassis himself, it's really interesting. My personal opinion, like, I think it's similar to many others, is kind of changes. He's like, he's definitely quirky and odd. And we saw that live on that Sunday night broadcast, but he's kind of strange. It's not like a pleasant one, like kind of Greinke is. It's really different. And of course that shouldn't affect our fantasy outlook, but I'm not the super Cassis stan that I was from the beginning of the year. And unfortunately that's personal.
Yeah. It's amazing. A guy's personality can kind of impact your feelings on him on as a fantasy player, but if he comes up and produces, we'll like him a lot more. If he comes up and doesn't, then we probably won't like him. So at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. As long as he's not, being a, piece of crap and hitting women or doing, some of the stuff that people do that I have no interest in having on my teams. But that's another story for another day. The Detroit outfield is getting crowded with Kerry Carpenter starting a rehab. Riley Green's on his way back. Parker Meadows just got called back up off an injury. You're looking at a completely different outfield coming up. Any interest in Kerry Carpenter coming off a rehab?
Yes, and unfortunately this past weekend would have been the weekend to grab him. And it's tough also setting bids this time of year because we want to have the bench flexibility. But to grab somebody like Carpenter, it needs to be like, how do I put this? I had Luis Ranjifo on a bunch of teams where that would have just been a nice swap. And the smart version of me would have been like, okay, this is a wrist injury. It's already been bugging him. He's back on the IL on it. I owe nothing to him. Maybe now is a good time to cut. You see those multi-positions of flexibility, multi-position eligible, and you want Ranjifo to be back and be flexible in your lineup, but that would have been a good spot because at this point, with everyone knowing Kerry Carpenter's coming back, he is a powerful bat in the middle of that lineup, albeit as a platoon guy, he's going to command some dollars. So you got Carpenter, and you got two big boys here, Michael Harris and Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts expected back probably sometime next week. Ohtani will continue to lead off. Mookie Betts will split up the lefties, Ohtani and Freeman. And then Michael Harris II, dealing with this hammy for quite some time. He began his rehab on Tuesday, should be back next week. He's another guy that actually, I think he might end up falling a little bit next season as well. I mean, I don't think people are going to be too enchanted with him, especially dealing with the low walk rate and some of the struggles this year, even before he went on the IL.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Harris is an interesting one. That hard hit data is still really good. He just still hasn't put up stats. I don't see him falling really past the fourth round, moving in the next year, just because the allure of a healthy Acuna, Albies, a bounce back from Olsen, that Braves offense. If Michael Harris is producing, that's why he was going in the second round. You're looking at a 2020 guy with a good batting average, but there is some flaws there. The Braves desperately need him to come back and get on fire because that team has just been in a funk the whole season. So who knows? He can come in, light it up. He's a really good baseball player, a good fantasy player to have on your team. I don't have any stashes of him, so I'm selfishly hoping that he comes in and plays okay and doesn't do too good, but that's just me.
Yeah, and I do need him. I've got him on a couple of OCs. I got him on a main event, so I've been holding on and waiting. And it's just been a revolving door of injured guys. So obviously that would be great getting Mookie Betts back on a team that has Bobby Witt and Ellie De La Cruz in the OC. I'll be pretty excited about that as well. On the pitching front, a few guys expected to be back. Mason Miller, congrats if you did not add Tyler Ferguson this week and follow the Fab article and figuring that Mason Miller would be back soon. He's coming back sooner than expected. That should be sometime around Wednesday. We'll see. If just kind of goes back to his role or how they'll treat him. So you got him, you got Casey Mize coming back from a rehab assignment. Alex Cobb is back after basically not pitching at all this year. Lots of rehab starts for him. And then Joe Musgrove, he's expected to start this weekend, most likely, probably a 4-5 pitch inning limit or 4-5 inning limit. And he threw 43 pitches, just a little over 3 innings pitch on Sunday. So he might line up against the Marlins this weekend.
Yeah. I mean, if you're waiting on Musgrove, it's actually a perfect you know, start to have him start this weekend because you weren't starting him anyways. You need him to build up that pitch count because the guy coming in 65, 70 pitches is just, it's really not going to do you any good unless he's got an opener in front of him, which he will not. So, you know, kind of a wait and see. That's kind of, you know, been really difficult this year on these injured starting pitchers coming back. We saw it with Clayton Kershaw, Robbie Ray, Jeffrey Springs. You wait all this time, you want to start him immediately, but there's some rust coming back. There's pitch count buildup. I know Robbie Ray's had a couple of good starts, one stinker. And there's only 8 weeks. So how many starts are you getting out of these guys? So be careful when you're stashing these starters and hoping they're going to save your team when there's only select amount of weeks left.
And as for Casey Mize, I don't think I'm really interested. I think even during the season, when he was available in Fab, I just was not having it. I remember there was one week where I fully passed on him and he had that beautiful Monday start. I don't know how beautiful it was. It was a mixed bag, but he just out of nowhere, a guy with a pretty low K rate just had like 9 Ks and 4 innings or something like that. Gave up a few earned runs, but other than that, he just, yeah, has not been living up to the hype since he's returned from TJ. Obviously, big, big prospect. We'd like to see him come back and do well. At some point, this Tigers rotation will be good again, but I don't know about it this year beyond Tarik Skubal.
Yeah, I was going to say Mize, you know, number one pick, overall pick, just has not, you know, fulfilled that potential that everybody thought he would have, you know, coming out, striking everybody out. I mean, he's at, 8 strikeouts per 9? The guy just has not really been effective in the major leagues. He's getting better. Might be a really good buy-low candidate next year with, you know, the pedigree and, you know, hopefully health. But, you know, who knows? And I'm fascinated how the A's use Mason Miller. Selfishly, I got him on a couple big teams. I hope they don't kind of slow roll him and kind of shove him back into the closer role and keep him rolling because he's a monster when he's out there.
Grayson Rodriguez, he was scratched from a start on Tuesday with lat discomfort. Obviously not ideal. I mean, it's a Tuesday start. I think he was lined up for 2 this week and never know, something like a lat that seems like something that would send him back to the IL. And then a hitter went on the IL on Tuesday, and that was Gabriel Moreno, who was really starting to heat up, especially there against lefties, hitting second in the lineup. He was hitting really well, but he's got a left adductor strain, and he is going to be an easy drop in all formats, people taking a 0 for the rest of the week.
Do you think the baseball players in the 80s knew what an adductor was?
I don't think so, and I don't think they cared.
And what is going on with your boy Tyler O'Neill? What's he got, the scurvilitis? He's had a stomach issue the last 3 or 4 games, been out. So I started him in one league hoping he'd be back, but he was out again today. So hopefully he gets taken care of that and gets back in the lineup.
Yeah, and that's just par for the course. It's like these group of guys that you know, when you get that full season of health, like we saw with Luis Robert Jr. last season, and we even saw with, several guys, right, over the years. When the season happens and it all comes together, it's massive. And it even happened for Tyler O'Neill a few years back. But this is just kind of who they are, and it's something that needs to be expected. And so in a situation like that where I have Tyler O'Neill on so many teams, I'm usually erring on the side of caution. When it comes to setting lineups, like I realize if he plays, it's probably going to be good. But if he's already sitting out that first day, or it's not looking good, chances are the rest of that series probably isn't going to go well. Then I'm looking at the fact that it's Seattle and he's facing like Wu and Castillo and these guys. So, you know, I ended up just putting in some bums for him. And if he hits a couple home runs like he does occasionally in a game, so be it. But listen, that's the way I play. I like to get those kind of guys and balance it out. But it's a tough game. Maybe one of these days I'll start to go safer.
Yeah, and a good rule of thumb, even if it's a 4-game week, if your guy's out on Monday, try to bench him because you don't know if he's going to play Tuesday, Wednesday. We are ever the optimists as fantasy baseball players, but if you act as a pessimist, you're going to be more successful. You know, that's why you want a backup at each position if possible. And that's why your boy Luis Rengifo is so valuable, right? You know, having every position basically other than first base. So I get the hard drop on that, but you know, if a guy is not starting on Monday due to a possible injury, I would bench him for the, you know, the first 4 games.
Yeah. Easy call. Some guys we're still waiting on here, that are pretty crucial to teams, and specifically two first rounders, Julio Rodriguez of the Seattle Mariners, still dealing with an ankle injury, taking swings on Tuesday, started a straight line program. Fernando Tatis, that one's a little murkier as far as the timeline's concerned, still dealing with this thigh issue, out for several weeks. There's no specific clarity. There are like some positive reports, but really is a mixed bag. Fantasy managers would be very excited to get either of those two guys back. I personally have a few Julio, would like to see him soon. And yeah, I'm sure he can't wait to get back to that lineup. It's a more fun one now, especially with Victor Robles going off.
Yeah. It's nice to see the improvements that the Mariners have made, because that lineup was wasting that epic pitching they have. It's like, you know, the Oakland A's pitching with Mulder, Zito, Hudson back in the day, where they just were dominating people. So they need to score some runs to help that pitching out. I know you left the next one for me, Bo Bichette. That was the most pleasant drop that I've had this year. I dropped him everywhere. He's not doing baseball activities yet, so he's not days away. He's weeks. Calf injury, and even if he comes back, I think it's a lost season for him. So hopefully discounted next year. Maybe I'll buy back in. Maybe I'll be burnt. But man, he hurt a lot of my teams this year. So I've been really digging out of batting average holes, especially because he was supposed to be one of my batting average anchors. And he was an anchor, just not in the right way.
So you're telling me that me spending $4 on him in an OC was a bad idea, probably.
It's $4. You'll never get back for that.
A few pitchers here on the way back. I picked up Clark Schmidt. And this is by default. It's because I missed out on every other pitcher, Springs and everyone else. But in my super auction, I grabbed him, probably still a couple weeks away from returning. And I guess I didn't really think about, I didn't think it through too much, because there really isn't a rotation spot for him right now. The possibility is that he does return to the bullpen. He's up to 20 pitches in his last, facing live hitters. And he's going to do so again this week. So we'll hopefully see him back at some point, but I don't know what we're going to get out of him. Ranger Suarez, the MVP of the first half, the Cy Young of the first half. He is still rehabbing. You know what? It's really funny. I dropped him in one 12 team OC and then I picked him up in another. It's, you know, team needs. I don't know if my team needs an injured guy, but that team picked him up.
Yeah. It's kind of a fascinating conversation with somebody like Ranger. Is he worth a stash? What payoff does he have? Obviously 15s are much deeper than 12s. I might be more open to it in a 15, hoping he comes back for the last 6-7 weeks healthy. Phillies are going to get a lot of wins. So in a 12, I'm really not interested, just because the replacement cost is much better, and you know, got to be cycling through those pitchers a little more. Ranger was obviously pitching above his head, cause he's not a Cy Young, pitcher, but man, he's been good. I undervalued him and I'm regretting it. So another Tampa Bay Ray coming back, Drew Rasmussen. I read he was returning as a reliever. Could be some value there. Maybe jump in the save situation, replace the Jason Adam role. Guy's really good when he pitches. I don't know what it looks like when he's coming back. Any thoughts on him?
Not really. If I was maybe in a deep saves holds league, solds league, I think maybe that would be a scenario. And maybe there's even a week where he's fantasy useful if he is taking on that Jason Adam role and is striking guys out, you know, doing the whole 1.1 innings with 4 strikeouts and they're just like all clean, and then, you know, gets lucky with some wins. But that's a tough game to play really with the relievers, and especially at this point of the season. So yeah, not much interest. I'm looking forward to having him, seeing him back next year.
Yeah.
Now for the guys that are happening, the guys that are coming up and the guys that are smashing. By the way, in my FSGA league, the last 2 weeks have been last 3 weeks, it's a different type of format where I'm allowed to pick up after waivers on Monday morning, just like a first come, first serve. And just drop anyone you want for no dollars. And a couple of weeks ago, I picked up Tyler Fitzgerald for that big week. And it's exactly like the week I needed, you know, team needed home runs. It just happened to happen. And Then picked up Jackson Holliday, and then just now Victor Scott on this past Monday morning. So these things are happening. I'm excited. Victor Scott the second, read something on Fangraphs from Jeff Zimmerman, his Mining the News column, which is always fantastic. Him talking about a little shift in his plate approach, and specifically with his leg kick, and how effective he's been since he's made that change. We remember how pitiful he was at the plate when he first came up with St. Louis in April, and especially when some of us spent $100+ on him in Fab. Now he's back, was available for a lot less, I think on average of $13 in Fab in main events. And boom, there it is. Second game back, hits a home run from the nine hole. And hey, maybe there's something to be excited about here.
Yeah, man, he is one of the most polarizing players in the fantasy community. People love to spend money on him, and then people love to talk bad about the people spending money on him. It's really fascinating. The guy has an opportunity, if he gets some run, to run. And the changes he made in his swing, I just looked tonight, were significant. Looked a lot more powerful. Leg kicks have timing issues, things like that. But I also, the Cardinals have kind of still a glut of outfielders with Tommy Pham, Newt Barr, Burleson. So there's no guarantee that he's going to play because you have Brendan Donovan as well if they want to play Nolan Gorman. But if he gets hot, he could, steal 15 bags the last, 8 weeks and really kind of help you out in that category. So I get the excitement about him. And sounds like your gut has been awfully hot on these early pickups. Good job.
Yeah, and your boy, you made the correlation there to a certain former stud Giants shortstop, and I guess Blue Jays shortstop, and maybe he was on another team. What's the
Rockies, connection? Not Giants.
Did I say Giants? Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, Tyler Fitzgerald. Funny story in our group text, I called Tyler Fitzgerald the next Troy Tulowitzki, or compared him to him, and Jinstad asked, who said that? And I said, me. I just watched him, and he's a big tall guy. I didn't realize he was that big until he started playing every day, but he's like 6'4", real lanky frame, and the guy is on a heater. But looking at his stats in the minors, I think over 162 games last year, he would have had a 30 homers, 30 stolen bases. But he has just been in fuego this year. He's leading off versus lefties, batting fifth against righties. He's got 29 runs, 12 homers, 24 RBIs, and 7 stolen bases, batting .314 with a 1.023 on-base percentage plus slugging. Those are very rare stats for that long of a period. The .395 BABIP will come down, but he probably about a .240 to .250 hitter, but the counting stats look like they're there. So I'm really excited as a Giants fan. I prioritized him in Fab. I paid a lot more than you did because you got him a week early, but I spent about $60 to $70 on multiple leagues. I'm excited so far. He hasn't started running like he was earlier in the season, but I'm hoping he does. But the Giants don't seem to run as much as they should, so it'll be interesting what happens.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting again. These are the guys that I'm scouting and looking into for next season when we start doing our analysis and started our rankings, projections, and all that. And I just wonder where a guy like that, if say he just kind of he doesn't fully fall cold over the next 2 months and just stays steady, that's a guy that's going to creep up. I mean, at least into the top 150 overall, maybe even the top 100. You never know. It just really depends. But that's also always sort of a scary profile. And I don't want to correlate it specifically to Nolan Jones, but we always see things like that happen where, it feels like, oh man, should we learn our lesson from this or not? You've got two extremes there with like a Nolan Jones and a CJ Abrams. Both were big prospects. Abrams, obviously a much bigger one. And Abrams was horrendous in that first half of the season. Second half of the season, he was just gangbusters and he just kept that up all year. And I was afraid both of them were a little bit of overpays. Abrams has proved that he's not been. And then I'm not sure what to make of Nolan Jones. Like if he had been healthy all season, like what would he have been? What percentage of his sort of fantasy value or that 60, 70th overall would he have earned? Or would he have just been a bust anyways? It's really hard to assess.
Yeah, I think the hardest guys to assess is the 30% K rate, just because the variance is so big. You have the Adelis Garcias, the previous two, if not three seasons, he was a monster. All of a sudden, the K rate seems to catch up to him this year, or he might not be healthy, whatever it is. But these guys can all of a sudden go in from batting 260, 280, and, you know, in Fitzgerald's case, over 300, down to 210, striking out that much of the time if they're not getting lucky with the balls in play, or, you know, start having some extra swing and miss, or, you know, popping balls up, or whatever it is. Those guys are really hard to really put a draft cost on and really be comfortable paying a top 100, top 150 pick just because of the variances there. And once they start batting 200, they lose playing time, and then it's just a disaster.
A few other guys here of note. There was a rookie called up from Sugarland, AAA, from the Astros. He's a corner infielder. His name is Zach DeZenzo, D-E-Z-E-N-Z-O. And he's coming up. He's playing some first base and some DH. He spent the first couple of months of the minor league season with a wrist injury. He was out. Then he came up, and in 53 plate appearances in AA, he hit nearly 400 with a OBP nearly 500. Then he came up just a few games in AAA, and now he's been called up. Obviously, the Astros not too excited about John Singleton there at first base. Obviously, they let go of Abreu. And it's kind of weird for like a top team like that, a playoff team like that, to be calling up a rookie and like making these deals. And obviously, the whole Kyle Tucker saga is a whole nother thing. But I think we all know not to trust Astros brass.
Yeah, it's really strange that the Astros were not trying to go get Josh Bell when he got DFA'd. That first base has just been a disaster. It's really shocking that John Singleton didn't work out this year for him. Who saw that coming, right? But, you know, maybe with DeZenzo, they'll just have him play right field like Lo Perfido before they traded him, since I thought he was a first baseman when he came up, but apparently he was an outfielder. I don't know much about this guy, so I can't add much, but, you know, talk about being pretty hot since coming off the IL and the minors. So lightning in a bottle, get some playing time. Offense is still pretty good even without Tucker in there, so could be worth a shot.
A couple other pitching notes, nothing too exciting. Logan Allen, we did warn you in the Discord, do not pick up out Logan Allen, because similar to a situation like with a Patrick Corbin, when it looks like he has a nice two-step on paper, avoid. But Logan Allen, who already, I think, had a 1.6 whip going into his IL stint, coming off of it, and then he was lined up for a two-step, and on Monday he got trounced and then demoted. So he's back down. I have a similar feeling, not loving Eduardo Rodriguez. He was picked up and probably going to be limited, not going to get to the five-inning mark in these starts. But either way, his two-step has already been literally washed out. That Tuesday start where he was going to make his debut has been rained out. But on a good note, Tyler Molly, he returned, part of the Texas Rangers. He pitched well on Tuesday, and there he is. Wow, we just had an earthquake.
Did you?
Wow.
All good? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't that crazy. Yeah.
All right. The screen's not shaking too much. I hope I don't feel it down here or up here. You're down there. Sorry, it's late.
The show must go on, baby.
Yeah. There's some arms coming back. Nothing too exciting, but you know, we got to have starters to get through the rest of the season because they're dropping like flies. So some minor interest in E-Rod, Eduardo Rodriguez. Molly was really good before he got hurt last year. He was actually a big draft target for me the year before. So I'll be watching him and see what his fab prices are. But nothing too special, like you said. We got a little Dodgers segment here, so I'll let you kind of jump in on this.
Yeah, first one's a bummer. Brusdor Graterol, who obviously has been a top reliever setup man for the Dodgers for many years. He spent a majority of this season on the IL, came back today. And I believe I was watching it as we started recording on the very first batter. I think it was like a 2-1 count, threw a pitch and grabbed at his hammy or the, you know, back of his leg. And he was hurting and he had to be basically kind of carried off by his teammates. Everyone's kind of look of horror in the eyes of his teammates on the bench, and he was crying, man. It was pretty sad. So that was a much needed guy they needed in the bullpen, especially with Blake Treinen going on the IL. So hope Brusdar will be okay, but it's not looking good for this year.
Yeah, guys worked so hard to come back. You can see, you know, these guys are much more than just baseball players or human beings, and the emotion involved is just brutal with that. you know, it breaks your heart, you know, even as a Giants fan, watching somebody go through that, you know, the emotion behind that and just knowing how hard they worked and it's just gone and how much more work's in front of them now.
Speaking of gone, Kevon Biggio, bye-bye. DFA'd is funny. I did tweet about it, that text message from Genstad to us about that, how literally Biggio's been the worst hitter in baseball this year, like ranked, among hitters with 200 plus plate appearances, was like 301 out of 301 in hard hit rate, plus striking out a ton. So he's horrible. Miguel Rojas had a very nice first half of the season and probably made sure that the team didn't trade for Jazz. He should be on his way back. And then, dude, Gavin Lux, what has been going on is mind blowing. Like, I just thought he was never going to be anything. And he's been legitimately not only one of the best, most consistent hitters since the All-Star break, but he's also hitting like in the middle of that lineup against righties.
You know, it's just amazing. It shows, and you know, we don't know how long it's going to last with Lex, but there is pedigree there and how much of a mental game baseball is. We think it's all physical with the tools, hit the ball, throw the ball, but it takes people a long time, players a long time to get comfortable and feel like they belong. All of a sudden when they do, I mean, kind of talking about Tyler Fitzgerald, even another Giant, Helio Ramos. These guys have a ton of at-bats at AAA. You know, they're bouncing back and forth. They're in the majors. Lux had the defensive issues, you know, it's probably in his head. So once he got settled at second and kind of got a little run and they needed him, he's like, oh, I remember how to play baseball. I'm pretty good at this. And confidence, knowing you can hit that breaking ball, knowing you could lay off that fastball off the plate, man, the numbers are, he's a monster right now. And, you know, it's easy to overlook and miss that hot run. I was trying to get him and I did miss out, but I definitely saw it and I'm impressed with what he's doing.
You had a funny note here about Miguel Vargas. This is the way I wanted to capture it. And you encapsulated it perfectly. You said Miguel Vargas is free, but he's in jail because he's with the White Sox. That dichotomy is perfect. So it's really weird how much I did pick him up on a couple teams, but how much I don't care as much about Miguel Vargas, just like that, after a whole half season of like fighting him, defending him, all of a sudden he's like not on the Dodgers. And yeah, I feel bad for him. I want him to do well and everything, but I don't know. I'm just not as invested anymore for obvious reasons.
There was a picture of him sitting on the ground outside the dugout at A Stadium, just looking miserable, only being on the White Sox for a week. Just, yeah. Man, amazing how quickly that works. Any interest in Max Muncy coming back? It sounded like he had a breakthrough. He was doing a sim game. I don't know if it's a week or 2 weeks, but he's been out forever. Is there any interest with the batting average floor to kind of pick him up?
Yeah, you know, I'll have to assess on a roster by roster basis. My original feel or even prediction about a month ago was that he just wasn't coming back this year. Like everything that I was seeing and reading was that this isn't good and he's just not going to be right. So he's already somebody that obviously, unless you're playing in walk leagues, OBP leagues, he's just not as valuable and he can be a major detriment, especially if he comes back rusty and he's just kind of cold out the gate and most likely almost definitely would be platooning, just playing against right-handed pitching and not even in the middle of the lineup, probably like he used to be. And yeah, I don't think so. I think sadly, at least for this season, I think I'm out on the Max Muncy train.
And just a couple other promotions to keep an eye on. Spencer Torkelson finally is getting hot in AAA. I know. Ooh. I just picked him up, hopefully for a stash. The Tigers don't need him with Bling Madras. I don't know if I just butchered that name Bling. Or not. But it's...
Why?
Talk about another number one pick the Tigers are trying to ruin. So maybe it's just not good to be a number one pick for the Tigers. And then... I think it's days now until Jason Dominguez is called up by the Yankees with Verdugo just being awful and still leading off somehow for the Yankees, and they could use him.
Yeah, and he's not even healthy. He's been pretty banged up. So
yeah.
Well, you know, the good thing is in addition to baseball season, football season is starting. An Underdog is the easiest place to play fantasy sports. It's also the fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Underdog is now offering a new customer FTN special with up to $250 on your first time deposit. Best ball season is officially underway, and the easiest place to play is at Underdog Fantasy. Make your choice from slow or fast drafts, starting with the $3 puppy, all the way up to the $1,000 entry mastiff. You can also challenge your friends in battle, as small as two-person, up to the usual 12-person drafts. The Underdog app is easy to use, and new best ball drafts are dropping each week. With the NFL season less than 2 months away, now is the time to start drafting to prepare for your home league. Sign up with the promo code FDN to claim your 50% deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store, and don't forget to register with our promo code FDN to claim that 50% bonus. NFL season is here, and who better to celebrate with than Underdog Fantasy? And who better to celebrate with than Vlad and Jason? We are here, the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, week 20, recording here on August the 7th, the 6th. And before we dig into kind of a topic on chasing categories, what about some just recent producers, guys that have been popping off since the All-Star break, and expectations that we might have for them for the rest of the season?
Yeah, a couple guys I've picked up in a couple multiple places. Xavier Edwards been really good, and one of the few guys running a lot right now. So he's leading off for the Marlins, batting over 400, and then stealing double-digit bags since All-Star break. So he's been really good. It's funny seeing on your list here about the isolated power. Seventh on the list is, you know, it must be nice that the Marlins don't need a guy like Josh Bell. They can just give him away. So they have that many good players where they don't need somebody that's just mashing the ball. So I thought that was amusing.
Josh Bell hadn't had a multi home run game. He's had like one in the last 2 years. And then he had one in his first game with Arizona in place of Christian Walker. And in 17 games since the All-Star break ended, he has 8 home runs and among the leaders there. So that's definitely interesting. As far as isolated power, the number one guy in baseball right now, it's not Aaron Judge, actually. I don't mean overall. I just mean since the All-Star break. It's your boy, Tyler Tulo Fitzgerald. He's got a 574 ISO, super low contact rate, right around 69%. Pretty nice. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Aaron Judge, Brent Rooker, Lawrence Butler, and Kettle Marte. Those round out the top isolated power guys. And then just two hitters with a 40% strikeout rate since the All-Star break. One of them hit a home run on Tuesday. That's Jake Cave. And the other is Luis Robert Jr. Luis Robert Jr. has a 44% strikeout rate since the All-Star break. Granted, it's just been a couple of weeks. But what's something that I had not noticed is he's been running like crazy. I've never really seen this out of him before. I had a double take. The guy has 7 stolen bases since the All-Star break. And then as I was typing up our outline, he stole an 8th today.
It's if you can't get on base, when you do, you might as well steal, right?
He's incredible. And then the guys with double-digit stolen bases since the All-Star break, you mentioned one of them, X-Man Xavier Edwards. And then you got Ellie De La Cruz and Ohtani. Ohtani, the first man to go 30-30 this season. Ellie De La Cruz has been just on fire the last couple of days. By the way, how much of him do you have? And how are those teams doing? I'm guessing
I only have one Ellie share. I couldn't get on board in the second round price. I tried to get him in a couple of one big league where I was punting batting average, and Matt Shepard bit him up to, I think, 32, and my stop point was 31. So I end up pivoting the CJ Abrams, which has been fine, but that would have been really nice for my steals if I got Ellie there. How many do you have of him?
I think only one or two. I have him in that 1OC where the offense is loaded. It's got Mookie, Bobby Witt. Pitching has been an issue, but really that's it. And that's, kind of, we're so in tune with fantasy baseball and the day-to-day and all the work that we do, that I don't even need to look at the top overall teams in each NFBC contest to like know who these guys, who are on these guys' teams. It's like, guys like that.
Yeah. A couple other notes from this leaderboard from the isolated power. 2 A's in the top 5 and Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler. That is not an offense to target anymore for streaming pitching. Mm-hmm. It's easy to fall into that trap, seeing Oakland on the schedule and being an automatic start. But those guys, I think, have most home runs or second most home runs in the American League. They strike out a bunch, but they can really hurt your pitcher. And then Jake Berger, it's nice to see him kind of finally turn on. I was looking at dropping him about 3 weeks ago and had one of those roto gut feelings from Vlad, and I held on to it. I'm pretty happy because he's been really good for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
And by the way, I just happened to pull up the MLB team runs leaders since July 1st, just picked that arbitrary July 1st. And you know what? The Yankees are not in that top five. The Dodgers are not in that top five. Neither are the Phillies nor the Atlanta Braves. The top five teams in runs scored since July 1st, it's the Cardinals first by a wide margin. They have 188, not including Tuesday's games. Then it's the Red Sox, then the A's, then the Mets, the Vientos Lindor-driven Mets, and most recently Jeff McNeil, and then the Kansas City Royals. So it's an interesting mix, man. I just love the constant surprises in baseball.
That's the fun part. If you really dive in, it's not stagnant, right? And it's not just the best teams are going to be the best teams. You can really find values on mediocre teams, good teams, bad teams, because they all get hot at some point. It's when multiple hitters get hot at the same time, right? So yeah. Take advantage of it. I don't just need Yankees. I don't just need Red Sox. You know, These teams that you don't think were that much value can be huge value. And obviously the Cardinals with Victor Scott now, they're going to score 200 runs in August.
Yeah, right? It's happening. Real quick notes before we get into our final topic here of the day. I just happened to take a look at the best schedules in the next couple of weeks. So this would be, you know, the week starting next Monday, week 21 and week 22, middle of August. And there aren't a lot of schedules that stand out, but a couple that did to me. One would be the Yankees. They're going to be facing the White Sox, the Tigers, then Cleveland, possibly without Bybee still, and then the Rockies. So literally three of the four worst pitching teams. Don't need to tell you to play your Yankees. And unfortunately, in most formats, most of those guys are rostered. But, I mean, you know, I don't know. I would like to look at the lefty-righty split. Like, if they have a bunch of lefties coming up, then DJ LeMahieu might make sense because he's a platoon partner of Ben Rice, and he's actually been looking kind of good. So in deeper formats, that's just somebody I'm just, you know, just keeping my eye on. And then the Blue Jays also have a really nice schedule, and they have a lot of guys that are available in all these raw in most formats. They're going to face the Angels 7 times in the next 2 weeks, and they're also going to go for 3 at Wrigley. Hopefully it'll be hot with the wind blowing out, and then 3 at home against the Reds. So Alejandro Kirk, 3-run bomb on Tuesday. He's still available in a bunch of leagues. Maybe Joey Loperfido gets hot. He's been stinky since he's joined the team. Davis Schneider starting to gain more playing time. Ernie Clement, if he's still available in some deep leagues, he's been doing some leadoff work and stealing some bases, not very much power. And then, you know, Stuart Baroa, he's not really playing, but he's just, again, quote unquote, a guy to keep eye on. In his last 20 plate appearances, he's got 4 stolen bases. He's a speed guy, kind of a bench bat right now, but again, looking for speed, getting desperate, just somebody to consider.
Yeah, I mean, he could really jumpstart your steals. He kind of isn't playing, but he'll come in 5th, 6th inning, either defense or, you know, a pinch runner, and immediately get a stolen base opportunity. So if you're really hurting the steals, he's a guy to look at. And, you know, this is why Vlad is the man when it comes to fab work, this deep dive into these schedules and who can help, who can't, you know, low-owned players. This might come to bite me, but I think it's never DJ LeMahieu, Vlad, but that's just my own personal bias.
It's probably the correct answer. That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, that's a perfect segue into our final topic here. Just general strategies as far as picking up players in fab that are helping us to gain points and stats in categories that we need, especially, you know, particularly in roto. And also the same thing with lineup strategies. So as far as how many closers versus starters that you're playing in your lineup, how you're balancing the power and the speed, chasing average, those kind of things. So maybe take us through on an intro on this.
Yeah, it's fascinating kind of, you know, looking at the standings, where can I gain? Where can I drop? You know, where are the cliffs? I can jump up 3 points in batting average, or I can lose, you know, 4 points in RBIs, you know, gain 2 points in steals, whatever it is. I think one of the first key is really looking at your individual league standings and seeing where you can gain, how many points you can gain, how many points you could lose if you just, example, start two stolen base guys and you're sacrificing runs and RBIs. Do you have enough of a gain from the steals to lose in the RBIs, runs, and home runs? So it's looking at the standings, really analyzing it, and then maximizing at-bats. Something I've really noticed on my teams is I track my at-bats weekly, and the teams that are doing really well are getting over 300 at-bats per week per team. The OCs that are doing well are about 320, but the teams that are tend to struggle getting stats are about 250, 260. Now, you can overcome those stats on weeks that you guys get hot, but overall, it's a game of numbers and percentages. So the more at-bats you have, the more opportunities, the more runs you're going to score, more RBIs, more homers. So, you know, you don't want empty at-bats, but, you know, having these guys stashed, having too many injured guys, taking, you know, getting only one game out of three on a weekend or two out of three, it adds up. So really try to maximize at-bats to get the categories.
Yeah, it's difficult when you don't have the roster flexibility and you can't easily bring someone in, especially on a busy weekend. You're busy with, you know, family and other things, and then you've got to spend some time in FAB. But if you don't have that extra time to look at both series in the week, right? Because in NFBC, you've got the weekend where you got to set lineups, and if you're not keeping your bid priority list in mind of like what those schedules are and when you can insert players into your lineup for the first series versus the second series, yeah, you're literally giving up plate appearances. And especially with the platoon guys, if you just end up having too many of those guys on your team, especially maybe like the short side platoon guys, if you're not mapping that out in advance, you're just giving up runs. And as we know, leagues are lost by a single run on the last day. It happens all the time every year. So there's a lot to be said on that side of things.
Yeah. Every stat matters. So taking a zero is just an absolute killer. You think over the course of a, 162 game season, a 28 week fantasy season, that one run, one RBI, you know, a hit here, a stolen base there won't really matter. But man, there's horror stories, there's success stories, there's victories, there's defeat. Over the last pitch of the last game caused this. I lost a main event to Phil Dussault last year with the save in the last game of the year he got. And actually, it wasn't even him. It was a team in sixth place that got two saves in the last two games and flipped me by 2 points and caused me to lose by one. So it adds up. So really maximize everything. I'm not bitter at all, by the way. but
no, don't remember it at all.
Not exactly. Yeah. But, you know, there's other things to do. You know, when you're struggling for saves, when do you start punting saves? Is this the time? If you can't gain any in saves, do you want to chase wins and strikeouts? With the caveat being, if you go nine starters, there's a much better chance your ratios, your ERA and your WHIP are going to get hurt rather than helped.
I was going to ask you how you manage the chasing strikeouts with two-start pitchers in 15s versus 12s, or obviously the inventory or the players available in 12s. You can usually find some, you know, a few guys that can be helpful, or at least like maybe have nice matchups. Of course, it doesn't always work out, right? In 12 teamers, Hayden Birdsong was available in 60% of the OC with the most beautiful matchups on paper. And what happens? Lo and behold, the bird that could not get shot down was destroyed. Very bad analogy there. That makes no sense. But
you got nice one, Vlad. The bird did not have a song.
No, did not sing. Did not sing on Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things for me I've really focused on in my 15-team leagues is to not be streaming from the fab pool, the waiver wire, is to be streaming from my roster. So I'm trying to get a week or two ahead of it, making sure I have enough pitchers where I'm not looking on the waiver wire for a two-start guy. It's a recipe for disaster. Now, there's certain leagues when you're in 6th, 7th place right about now, I'm not playing to try to get 5th. I'm trying to get in the money. So you need to start taking chances with some two starts. Hopefully you get lucky. You know, and a lot of it is luck at this point. We do all the work. We put the guys in position. Now we're hoping they get hot.
And with the, as far as the planning for hitters and making sure you're maximizing those at bats, as far as the schedule goes, it is nice to have an outlook of a couple of weeks in advance. But of course, we know that rotations are incredibly fluid and things will change right away. And then, you know, if one guy moves to the following series, the number of lefties or righties just is thrown off. And so managing that is very important. But as we know, there are a few teams that have a lefty or heavy staff as opposed to others, right? Like we know that if somebody's going to be facing the Nationals, you know, twice in the next 2 weeks, let's see who are the right-handers that are, you know, in some of those, on some of those teams that might be available in Fab or maybe are on the short side platoon. Why? Because four of the five National starters are lefties right now. So there are a couple of more teams like that. The Blue Jays, exact opposite. They're full righties, right? And things like that. So I think maybe having a little bit of a refresher, looking, kind of diving into those schedules and then being familiar with what teams have very lefty or very righty heavy rotations can help you navigate who might be the best Fab additions for you.
Absolutely. Each week I go through the next 14 days and I put the schedules on an Excel sheet and then highlight the games versus lefties versus, and then don't highlight the ones versus righties. And, you know, I try to, you know, map it out. But like you said, by the time you get through 1 week, it's usually tweaked a little bit moving into the next week. So you only can do so much, but being consistent on that and planning it out each week will maximize the at-bats and who you want to start, who you want to pick up, and ultimately who you want to drop to.
And then on the saves front, I know that I have had a team. I have a team that's pretty competitive in the OC and starting to move up in the top 50 overall, but it's really hurting for saves. And I've been playing guys that are not full closers. I've been, you know, playing AJ Puck last week, Daniel Hudson. And I think I even played like, I ended up landing on like a Jose Buto or something. And you could get lucky there, but it's difficult, right? If you're chasing, I remember even a few weeks ago, like I really needed somebody that could maybe get me a save or two and squeeze me to help me move up the overall standings. And I think it was like John Brebbia, who of course at that time, Michael Kopech was on the team. He just wasn't getting those save chances. And there's just a risk that ended up being for nothing. I spent the dollar. I played him all week. He got like one inning, two innings, and then obviously no save opportunities. And that's just a waste of a roster spot for the week. So that is also something that is difficult to manage if you're in a league where you need saves, but there are no actual real closers available. You just are almost guessing who's going to get the saves, and that's a difficult game to play. I don't know what you do in those type of situations.
Yeah, it's and you mentioned it, chasing an overall is much different than chasing a league title, right? You have to take some chances. You know, I'd be wondering out loud, you know, to look at that week, and what did Brebbia cost you? Even if he got you a save that week, would it have helped you enough? Because you probably lost in K's. How many spots did you go down versus the opportunity to go up in saves with that? So, you know, it's taking chances. I try not to start in 12 teams, especially. I hardly ever start a partial closer. I'd rather run eight starters unless it just I'd have such a massive lead in strikeouts and wins that I wouldn't. Then I can take some chances. And, you know, at the end of the day, you're trying to get lucky with a guy on the bench that will get the job full. Like AJ Puck gets named the closer. Daniel Hudson gets named the closer. And all of a sudden, you can start four closers the next week rather than hoping during the week that you're getting a save off a partial closer in a 12 team.
Yeah. And a good way to look at it is say you're chasing saves and you have two real life closers and like two other guys that are maybe partially, like count them as like a quarter closer. So what you're doing is you're throwing out a shorter lineup. Other people are playing nine pitchers and you're basically playing like eight, right? Because it's your five starters plus two closers and then a half a closer with those other two roster spots. And it's tough. And if you happen to get them on a week where maybe they have less appearances, that also makes it difficult. One last note is about the overall competition in NFBC, because I have had some subscribers reach out over the last couple of weeks. They are in the hunt, some of them for the first time, some in the top 10 overall, and just kind of figuring out how to manage. And I'm also noticing that maybe some people aren't like fully aware of the difference between the overall and the league. And of course, just on a basic level, the 2,500 or so teams that are in the overall competition of the OC, the NFBC OC, it's basically an entire pool. So instead of like a group of 12 and you're chasing 12 points per category, you're chasing 2,500 points per category in the overall. And that's where you're looking to gain. And when you go to standings, then you go to overall, you can look kind of dig in deeper. And there are a couple places that I like to look, obviously, is one is the category points. You would go to category points, you would click on each individual category and see how many of those 2,500 points you have. And when you click into the category stats, you can see how everything's really kind of really stuck together and how much a win really matters. Like you could literally calculate, like say I have 67 wins and I'm, you know, 240th in overall in saves. And if I have two more wins, I would be at like 80th overall, right? You're gaining 150 points. So there's so much of that. A lot of the, you talk to somebody like Cujo, Curtis Jones, guys that are always competing for the overall. Those are the type of guys you know, Drew Forte last season, who was fighting off all challengers to win the OC last year. Anyone, you know, talk to anyone competing in an OC, obviously Phil, and just, you know, get as many people's opinions on this, on how they're tracking, how they're looking at these things and how they gain in the standings playing league versus overall, because as you said, there's a little bit of a different element there.
Yeah. It is fascinating how many points can be moved on a day versus a week, you know, versus a month, especially in the OC with 2,400 teams. You know, I've never made a run in the OC. I got one in the top 50 this year, so I'm, you know, hoping to get hot there. But, you know, I some success. I think I had 11th last year in the main, second overall in the auction. And best advice I can get in the 15 teamers at least was, you know, try not to get too cute with it. And, you know, you want an attack saves, all of a sudden you're doing four or five relievers, then you're losing the ground in the other category. So be really calculated with your decisions. And at some point you want to win it, you know, because nobody's playing for second place, but second place is a lot of money too. So yeah, just make the best decision, put the best team on the field you can. And, you know, kind of hope you get lucky at that point. And, you know, everything needs to be calculated though. It's not just a guess and a whim.
Woo, I lost. I just checked. I hadn't looked at live standings. In my OC that I just told you was top 50 overall, it's now 68th. It dropped 435 points today in the overall standings. Pretty hard to do.
No, it's easy to do. That's what I'm saying. You know, just one bad day, one bad start. I mean, I had Ryan Helsley on my team that was in the top 50, and he blew the save, and I had Sonny Gray on another team, then that team went from 46 to 58 just from him blowing that save. And so it happens quickly. Just one blown save, it's ratios change, wins change, you know, things like that. So yeah, it's fun though.
Yeah, this team had Jeffrey Springs and Ryan Helsley. So 6 innings of 7.5 ERA. And then now check this out, 34 plate appearances or at bats for my team, 0 RBI, 176.
So that's hard to do in an OC.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Jason, thank you so much. We are troopers today because what we didn't tell you in the beginning, we are both dealing with sore throats. So it's been a little hard to talk, but I think we did a pretty good job, ran through a whole bunch of topics and another episode as we get closer to the end of the season here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking to you, man. Definitely missed being on last week, but we had some good fill-ins last week. But it's good to be back on the mic with you and, you know, excited to finish the season strong and help the listeners as well.
Yeah, that was a heck of a podcast, by the way. Eric Cross and Lucas Beery, they stepped in and talked a little bit of trade deadline stuff. But we will be back next week as we get into the grind of things here towards the stretch. We'll have more lineup strategy, Fab Strategy articles. I can't write an article on a podcast. Let's end it while we're ahead here. For Jason Anthony, I'm Vlad Sedler. This is the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.